Welcome to the Wild Adventures Podcast, the podcast where we get to hear people's life stories and see where they've identified adventure in their life. My hope for you as a listener is that you come away from this podcast inspired to make every day an adventure. I'm your endlessly curious host, Marlene Lowe, and my passion is in hearing and collecting your stories. Ollie Russell Cowan is founder and CEO of Rad Season, and it's where he's amalgamated his love of action sports, events, and festivals into one place. So Rad Season helps you discover events, book event tickets, accommodation, travel, and connect with other rad people all over the site. He also hosts a podcast called Rad Season Podcast, where he chats to the people who organize and travel the world's most epic action sports, adventure events, and cultural favorites.
I'm from London originally, and yeah. I was living over in Sydney for 7 years. And then I started off the company in Australia, mm-hmm. and then we've been in Portugal. So we moved here just over a year ago.
Nice.
So we wanted to kind of come back to Europe was the plan. So my wife and I've got a 3-year-old boy. So my wife's from Germany. Me being from the UK, like Australia is quite far, so we wanted to come back and chose Portugal. I'm a keen surfer, so I was like, I wanted to be by the coast again. We didn't want to move to London, we didn't want to move to Germany, so yeah, we chose Lisbon.
Portugal is a good place for surfing.
it's great. It's sort of it was kind of one of my main reasons for going, and yeah, it's got a nice we're close enough to the city and to airports for traveling, or when you can travel again. I mean, when we moved here, it's sort of pre pandemic, it was kind of it's pretty easily accessible to everywhere in Europe. Easy enough to get around.
So has the pandemic put a stop to the surfing, or are you still able to go out?
So when it started, there was a complete lockdown on surfing in Portugal, so you couldn't go anywhere. You weren't allowed to go in the sea to go swimming or to go surfing, or so that was for about 6 weeks. And then just recently, yesterday they announced that there's no surfing anymore, or surfing's been prohibited at Nazaré, which is like kind of the biggest surf sport in the world at the moment. So there was too many spectators last week. They had like a couple of thousand people on the beach for watching. And yeah, so I can still go out to my local break as long as it's sort of in the area. But the rules sort of change. But yeah, we're lucky enough to be able to go out, so we can go out on the mountain bike and go out surfing and stuff and still exercise, which is great.
So where did your love of adventure stem from? Is it something you've had your whole life?
When I was younger, I was lucky enough to be able to sort of get out in the outdoors and go away to different places and travel a bit. And I think sort of doing like individual sports as well as team sports, so things like I guess it sort of started off with skateboarding, and then looking at like, okay, well, where can I go? Where are these like other places that I can find that have these amazing sports for skateboarding? And then when I was 18, when I finished school, I then went to university in Wales, in Swansea. Mm-hmm. And the main reason for going there was that it was the closest university in the UK to the beach and to surf sports. So that was kind of like my prerequisite. I mean, yeah, the course was great, I guess, as well. That was probably a very reason. But I thought, okay, well, you know, this is the closest place to the sea. So I could go surfing in between lectures was the plan.
Nice.
Probably ended up doing that more than, you know, actually going to classes. But and then it just expanded from there. And I think the first year I had, so after my first year, at college, I had a couple of months break in the summer, and I went away with a friend to Indonesia, and that was sort of the first kind of proper traveling I've done on my own, without family, and you know, just with a mate at the time. And yeah, that sort of opened up everything of sort of what's possible and where you can go, and sort of seeing that all. I thought, you know, okay, well, like that started everything, and then I like looked at all these different places and was like, oh man, I could go to South America the following year, and you know, all you really need is like, if it's warm, you just need a couple of clothes, a small backpack, and you bring your surfboard with you, and off you go.
So tell us the progression, because you didn't start rad season straight out of uni. So what's your career progression been like to get to starting rad season?
Yeah, it's sort of been varied, should we say. So I kind of I went from finishing. I did a business and Spanish degree. And then from there, I went on to studying. I actually found a course that they were doing called Sports Management Surfing Studies. I think my mum found it in a newspaper and kind of gave me the article as a joke, going, "Oh, look at this!" And this after I graduated, and I didn't really know what I was going to do. So I saw it. I was like, "Oh, that's amazing! Like they got this course, a surfing course on the Gold Coast in Australia." I've got to apply just to sort of see, you know, just to check it out, see if I can get in. So I applied for it. Luckily managed to get in, and then before I knew it, I was heading over to Brisbane, and then down to the Gold Coast to do this 1 year course in sports management surfing studies, if you can believe that's a thing. And then from there, after the course, I was like, okay, I wanted to get into the action sports industry. Mm-hmm. It was really tough to kind of break into it, but I managed getting a job as a surfing instructor in the Canary Islands. So I left Australia after that year, went straight to the Canaries, did a season out there, and then it was almost like I was having too much fun. I was just like, oh, I was getting guilty, and I was like, okay, well, you know, I've kind of got to go and get a real job and, you know, sort my life out. What am I doing? Being a surf instructor, bumming around. And I then moved back to London, started working in sales, mm-hmm. and did that for a while. And then did an internship with an action sports media company. Yeah. And then went on to work for them for a couple of years in advertising on print magazines and on their online websites. And then I was keen to go back to Australia. So after not being there for a few years, I was like, okay, well, you know, what do I want to do? Where do I want to be? Mm-hmm. And my girlfriend and I at the time were sort of actually in Portugal. We were deciding, okay, like, where do we want to move to? And we're in like where we are now in Lisbon. We're sort of thinking, okay, Sydney would be a cool place to go to. So we did the whole visa application. It took about a year and a half to go through all that. And then career wise, I was like, okay, I need to save up a bit more money. So I went into some more corporate sales for an IT research company. Mm-hmm. In London, and and then kind of did various things. I was doing event sales over in Australia, and then the time came where I thought, okay, like I want to do something for myself. And then we're sort of thinking about what we could do. We got married over there, and then we had our honeymoon. We had about a 4 month break. Yes. So the idea was to sort of travel from like we had a service in Australia, and then we got married in Germany. We left there, we went over to New York, and we had, I think, like three and a half, four months to try and go from there all the way to LA. Yes. So we went from New York City to Panama, from Panama City, and then kind of went all the way through Central America. Mm-hmm. And for me, it was sort of like, okay, well, you know, it'd be cool to do cultural stuff, go inland, and then check the forecast to see when the waves are good, go back down to the coast, and sort of go in and out between the coast and and sort of seeing these cool cities. So we were sort of looking at all these places and going, okay, well, like, are there any kind of crazy festivals happening? Are there any sporting events? What's going on? And we couldn't really find that much. So you kind of get like a one-liner in the Lonely Planet, which sort of says, okay, there's like some Day of the Dead festival going on in Mexico City. I was like, okay, that's cool. Let's try and go there for that, or, you know, whatever it may be. So we were trying to find these things. And we worked our way up through Mexico and then to LA and then flew back to Australia. And when I got back, I was like, okay, well, there's got to be something in this. We can try and put all this information together. And yeah, that was sort of the creation of Rad Season. So we sort of started off as a blog just about like what are the best events and festivals in the world. I thought about, okay, well, starting off with surfing events in Australia. And then I got carried away and I was like, oh, you know what? There's like this really epic music snowboarding festival in Canada, or there's some pretty cool stuff in Spain and England. So we basically just started combining all these things, and then ended up integrating all that information into a platform where people could sort of find out what was going on and book their accommodation and their travel around it.
That sounds really exciting. So when was that? Give us a timeline of when Rad Season started.
So that was 4 years ago was when it started. So just over 4 years ago.
And it's growing.
It was growing really well until end of February, start of March this year.
I wonder what happened then.
Yeah, there was a bit of a block on events globally. So obviously due to the pandemic, we were actually we were in Cologne Carnival in Germany at the time, and it was sort of when news just broke out that happened in China, and then like there was a lot of cases in Italy, and Germany sort of hadn't really hit and weren't really thinking too much about it. And then there was it was in the news, oh, two people in Cologne have got the virus, and this is like there's 5 million people at Carnival for this event, and we're like, oh, you know, it's just gonna pass, you know, like didn't really think much of it, it'll be over in a couple of months. So it was almost like in March time when they announced that there was going to be a global travel ban. And instead of like people were just, and me included, you know, like people were going to their computers and be like, okay, well, instead of going crazy festival Barcelona or, you know, whatever they're Googling, or, you know, like sports events somewhere, they're like, can I go to the supermarket, or is there toilet paper left? You know, so the whole shift on travel and events and entertainment just completely, you know, as you know, like completely stopped. So that kind of changed things up a bit. We're sort of looking at from that, okay, well, like what else is going on? And like, we're looking at virtual events and other things as well.
So how do you see Rad, do you see an end in sight, or what do you think will happen with Rad Season going forward?
So with us, like a few others, we started a podcast during that time. So we started that about 6 months ago now. And that was sort of been a really good way of just staying in touch with people within the industry. And then almost having this aspirational perspective on events, that some of these events have been going for hundreds and hundreds of years and they're not going to stop. So they may stop for a year or two. So things like Oktoberfest and some of the sort of cultural crazy festivals in Spain, the more commercially led ones, music festivals where, you know, they need sponsorship up front and things like that, there'll be less of those and there'll be less big events like that. But the stuff that we focus on and the things that I love, like cheese rolling, for example, in Gloucestershire in England, and weird events like that, and like bog snorkeling in Wales and stuff. And these events have been running for a while. So next year, like, no one can really predict what's happening. They're trying to put measures in place and sort of, you know, scale back numbers and sort of do like COVID testing and stuff like that. But we're sort of looking at it going, okay, well, if next year doesn't happen, how can we be in the best position for 2022? So we're just sort of working on our site in the background to try and make sure that the information is as accurate as possible and kind of have the best videos. And then in the meantime, doing the podcast and kind of almost putting a series together of like all these like incredible events and the people behind them as well. So everything from like the event organizer to professional sort of action sports athletes.
So tell us more about the podcast itself.
So that was kind of, that started off as like, okay, well, who are we going to start? There's so many characters within the space, within the industry. And so it's like, okay, well, who should we be speaking to about these incredible events? And then we kind of like looked at our main categories, which sports we focus on. We just sort of similar to this, actually, just trying to get the story and bit of an open conversation about what's going on, how people are dealing with the current situation. Yeah. And then also kind of, you know, like what projects they're working on and sort of what they've learned.
Yeah. So the people you're talking to from around the set, well, they're all athletes, love being out in the wild and surfing, climbing mountains, etc. How have they been coping?
I think it varies depending on the area. I mean, I don't know how you found it with the people that you've been talking to, but sort of like, obviously depending on where they're based, how I think people in one way feel more connected to people that are close to them, mm-hmm. family and friends. Obviously spending a lot more time with family, you're working from home, you can't travel as much. You're confined in the same household or apartment wherever you live, so you kind of it either pulls you together or it pulls you apart, kind of thing. I think that's, we're sort of hearing that. Depending on where people are, you know, if they're based in sort of more rural areas and say in Canada, for example, away from a city, they've been able to get outside and they can still do what they love and enjoy the outdoors and go on sort of little like micro adventures locally. And then obviously sort of when this was in lockdown, this was all happening and we're speaking to people in the cities, it's sort of, you know, you feel that you like people are sort of trying to get on with it, but as be as positive as they can. But it's, yeah, there's been some tough situations around the world.
So you mentioned cheese rolling and bug snorkeling, and I'm glad I've watched BBC, so I know what they are. but what are the three, say the top three most accessible weird sports that people can partake in?
It depends, in the UK or just in general?
In general.
I don't know, like accessible, a lot of them are quite like easy enough to get to. So for example, in the case of like cheese rolling in Gloucestershire, it's on a place called Cooper's Hill, and it's just outside Gloucester, so you can get the train there, you can drive there. As taking part goes, I don't know, like I didn't do it. it was one of the first events we went to last year, and we did went with my wife and our son, and we were going to do 25 festivals in the summer around Europe. I was like looking at this crazy steep hill and people rolling down it, chasing a cheese as fast as they could. It's just mad. So I was like, okay, it's great to watch. It's great to be a spectator. If your game is probably pretty fun to do, but you know, like it's a 50-50 that you're going to get some injuries. every time, like they had four races, I wish I saw the stretcher at the bottom go up, like with like first aid, or there's an ambulance at the bottom. As a spectator, an event is just, it's wild. Another one, so quirky sports. We went like last year. I entered into the bog snorkeling world champions, bog snorkeling world championships in Wales. That was super fun. A little bit more remote to get to, so definitely sort of need a car to get there. But it's out in nature in this bog in the middle of nowhere, and Yeah, that was. So I actually took part in that one instead of bottling it like the cheese rolling. And that was really fun. It's funny. It's like half the people are in fancy dress, and there's two different competitions. So there's one for to see how fast you can go, and there's basically you got to do two lengths of this trench bog. So half the people are there, sort of trying to get a good time. The other half are there in fancy dress, and just it's the community feel of these events, and that's probably what I love about them. Is sort of when you're in, like, you feel connected to the people that are taking part in them, and it's just fun, and it's funny to sort of see, you know, like people taking part and, you know, just being involved in it all. So that's the second one. The third, I guess for accessibility, that's probably and quite well known is the Tomato Festival La Tomatina in Spain, mm-hmm. Which is close to Valencia. So you can sort of you can drive in or fly into Valencia, and then it's about 30 minutes outside the city on the east coast of Spain. There's loads of others that are sort of similar to that, but not with, like, people like in the Tomato Festival, everyone's throwing tomatoes at each other. I think they had about 30,000 people there.
Wow.
My mum's got a place near there, so it's kind of I'm almost like looking at that with my family and my sister and her kids and mine, and sort of thinking, okay, like, how can we make this a family event every August? It always happens at the same time of year, and this Martina's been going for like hundreds of years, so it's good to sort of, for us, it's like catch up with family. Like when we went last time, we kind of went together, and it's just a pretty funny random thing to do.
So a two-parter here. You talk about cultural events. So one, is there one that you've always wanted to go to but you haven't? And is there one that it's just like your favorite and you never want to miss out on it, and it just filled you with the world of joy?
So for cultural events, there's one. So this year, so last year we did 25 festivals around Europe as a sort of, we had time before we moved to Portugal, and we thought, okay, like when we move from Australia, we're going to try and go to like a few countries and travel around Europe and try and sort of explore what we like. So I was sort of going to a mixture of things like music, action sports events, the quirky weird ones. And we did a couple in Spain. Then when we were planning for this year, the plan was to go, okay, we're going to try and do more local things and we'll drive to them. So we'll just drive across the border. We'll try and do a few things in Portugal, but then we'll also go in Spain. And we're sort of doing a bit of research on it. And there's like a crazy festival that happens in Spain every month in a different part of the country, like a proper crazy one.
Yeah.
They have fiestas the whole time, you know, every week in one village somewhere in the country, over in Spain, there's something going on. But we found this one and it keeps on getting recommended, and we have it on Rad Season. It's a baby jumping festival in Spain, where it's cultural. So like, and a bit quirky. It's a quirky religious festival where a guy dresses up as, almost looks like a jester, but sort of like as a devil. And when the locals would when they had their kids christened, they put them down and on this mattress, and the guy that's dressed up comes and runs and jumps over them, and then sort of people chase him around town and stuff, and it's just like, it's so out there and just sounds so wild. And a lot of people I spoke to have sort of like a couple of people that I know have been there, and they just said it's so crazy, it's like you've got to kind of see it with your own eyes. So that's one that I was going to go to. And then we had all these others from variations of food fights. So there's like a grape throwing festival over in the island, the Balearic Islands, and there's different stuff. So that's one that is definitely on my list, and hopefully I can go next year. And then another one that I guess that I went the first time and I thought, okay, this is just going to be, it's not going to be great, and it, like, will it live up to the hype? And is it just people getting drunk? And that's Oktoberfest in Munich.
Yeah.
And Yeah, I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if you've ever been, or you know, if you've seen videos of it, but it's basically like all these like multiple massive halls, and you get in there, and everyone is dressed up. So all the men are in lederhosen, all the women are in sort of in the traditional dresses, dirndls, and like you're like, it's just a bit weird. Like, you know, like being from London, it's something like you see every day. and you get on the U-Bahn and the trains which take you to the Wiesn, which is where it's held, and there's just millions of people all dressed up, and then you can get into a tent. Normally you have to reserve a table, and you can't get served beer unless you're sitting down at a table. And these tents are packed. I mean, there's like a couple of thousand people in them, and I think it opens in the morning around like 10 o'clock. So you can get in there. Everyone's quite civilized. By like midday, like the whole tent is—they're all standing on these wooden walls, and it's like being in a ski bar in Austria, but like multiplied by 100. And then I was like, okay, this is just a novelty, you know? Like, okay, like, is it going to be this fun? And then, you know, when I went the second time, I was like, oh my god, like it's so. It's wild. Like, you go there and like you're eating, you know, all these like just like roast chicken, and like just seeing like the whole atmosphere. Everyone's having a good time. There's no aggro, and it's just everyone's just enjoying it together. Listening to the local music, and they're sort of doing like cheesy cover songs, and so that's one that I definitely recommend. And also, like, they do similar versions called Frühlingsfest, which is like a spring version. So we went to that last year as well, and it's pretty similar. It's just it's less known, so it's mainly sort of local tourists and people that live in the city in Munich that go to that. But yeah, both are a great time.
Have you ever tried any of the dark tourism spots?
I have. So there's this place which I like the whole like urban exploring as well as there's this place in Portugal called Avora, and it's close to the Spanish border. Mm-hmm. And in there they have one of the oldest, I guess it's sort of bones cathedrals as like they're known. I thought it was just going to be like a tiny little room where there's a chapel, just the walls are just bones and like human remains, but it was pretty big. You go in there and there's just like this big room, and like there's like Roman, the town is incredible. Like, there's all these like Roman ruins everywhere, and when we went there, it wasn't that busy. I think I was like the only person in there, and like they've done it up as a museum, but it was fascinating. And I know that there's sort of like, you know, there's places like that exists in multiple, yeah, like multiple areas. One I really wanted to go to that I didn't last year in Kiev. In the Ukraine is Chernobyl. I just missed out on getting a visa pass to go there for that. And that's something that, yeah, I guess has been hyped up a lot recently because of, yeah, the HBO sort of series they did on it. So it's kind of quite a popular one. Sort of being here and being in Portugal, we're trying to sort of discover some of these places. And there's sort of like where we live, just outside Lisbon, there's a bit of that in a town called Sintra, and there's sort of these underground tunnels, and they've got a lot of sort of dark history, should we say. So there's some cool stuff.
That's so exciting. Has there ever been an adventure or event that you've been to where you've actually feared for your life?
I wouldn't say feared for my life. I know there are ones that are on my list that do exist. I probably would be like, you know, like some somewhere I wouldn't take my kids to. I went to one earlier this year. No, sorry, just before Christmas last year in Spain, where they're like setting off rockets right next to you, and like they're almost having like it's called the flower fight, and in a place called Ibi, over on the east coast of Spain. And they're like, it starts off, they're like chucking eggs, and then they sort of set like these mini like firecrackers off, and then like the fire extinguishers come out, and then they throw flour at you. And it was just sort of like, I don't know, one guy set a rocket off so close to like to my feet, I wasn't paying attention. I was taking photos, and I turn around, and there's just this rocket going up in my face. And that was kind of pretty close, I'd say. But yeah, there's some cool ones over in like places like Mexico, and there's some mad stuff in Japan as well.
Like what? Tell us.
There's this one in Japan where I can't actually remember the name of it, but they ride down on this giant, it's basically like a giant log, and they ride down a hill. They ride down this really steep hill, and people are sort of strapped to it. And I think you basically, like, the idea is you've got to like hold on to it, like you're kind of on a rodeo or something. And that just the sort of the quirky ones really fascinate me. Just because I think because they're so unique in their own way. Same with the Oktoberfest. It's like it's been replicated in multiple countries, but it doesn't really compare. These things is like definitely kind of.
Could you look up the meaning behind why the festival started and things like that as well?
There's always a reason behind these things. Like the Tomato Festival, or with that one, it sort of started off with, I think it was like a bickering between villagers and things, and then all of a sudden someone throws a tomato, and then people get carried away. So I like to look into the history of it as well. Like, we went to one called the Wine Battle again in Spain last year, and it's sort of like a big wine fight in a vineyard in the Rioja region in the north of Spain, and that was incredible. And I sort of like was speaking to people, and like met one of the historians there, and he was sort of telling me like the history behind it and how it all started. And it's cool to sort of get a little bit of an understanding. I don't get too involved in sort of the origins of it, but it's good to know. And then when you see it like nowadays, why are these people doing that? Like, what's the reason? There's always there's a definite reason and sort of a lot of the weirder ones is like whether it's around religion or sort of the cultural aspects of it.
What's your advice to anyone that wants to live an adventurous life?
My advice would be, just go out and do it at your own pace. You don't just have to, if you're afraid of sharks, you don't have to necessarily kind of jump into a cage in South Africa and go cage diving straight away. You can kind of build up to things, So if you want to go to a food fight or do something adventurous like that, you can go to Matina. You don't necessarily have to go to one where they're throwing oranges at you. There's different levels. So I think it's sort of doing it bit by bit. Like, I'm not great with heights. I want to try and start a bit of climbing and sort of, try and overcome a certain fear. Or I used to hate public speaking. I get super nervous. I stutter. And then I'm starting a podcast, and I'm doing like live videos. And the more you do it, like with anything, like hopefully the easier it gets, and then the more comfortable you feel. So I'd say like ease in, and then do it bit by bit. Same with surfing. Say like you're saying, if you learn to surf, you don't have to like jump in and it's 10 foot. You go in, but it's a bit smaller, and then kind of build up.
So would that be your advice for any adventure sports?
I think so. I think that would definitely be my advice. I mean, something like I mean, a lot of these things though also aren't half measures. So, you know, if you're going to go on a big zip line, you know, maybe you can do a smaller one and then go on a longer one. But if you're going to jump out of a plane and do tandem skydiving, you've got to do it. So it's sort of like, you've got to, like, you know, if you feel the need that you want to do it, and you're sort of like, if you think about it, say two times or three times, then, you know, that's when you think, okay, well, like, I should try this. Mm. Like, for me, I was like, I don't want to look back on things and regret not doing them.
Yeah.
So I think that's sort of like, for, yeah, being adventurous and doing adventures is kind of, you know, it's personal. So it's different for everyone. And, you know, even like in lockdown, we were like walking around our neighborhood with our son, and it's sort of like, you know, you're going on little mini adventures trying to find, you know, like unique things and different places where we haven't been, maybe in a new forest or something like that. And that's an adventure. And especially for him, it's sort of like looking at all these things and like, yeah, everything's an adventure, you know, every day. So, yeah, I think definitely that would be my advice. Not just for doing like adventurous things, just in general.
Yeah. So the last question I've got for you is, for people that want to come into this, so surfing or skateboarding, whatever it may be, being an outsider to begin with can be quite daunting because you want to make friends and connections. What's a good way to try and overcome that so that you can become part of the community while you're still a newbie?
I think now it definitely seems more accessible than it was, if that makes sense. So it's less, depending on what it is, but some things are like less core, less cliquey.
Yeah.
There are different groups that you can find out, whether it's being like a Facebook group in a particular town for a sport, say. And that's quite good. So sort of joining these things. I remember when I moved back to London and I wanted to go surfing, after leaving Australia, and I joined then like the London Surf Club, and it sounds ridiculous. There's no waves in London, you know, like what is this thing, right? And people were basically meeting up, car sharing, and going down to the beach, and that was a really cool thing to do. Sort of like, okay, well, you know, it's a bit daunting. You don't really know anyone. You can jump in a car. You're with complete strangers. You're going to be on a drive with them for like 4 or 5 hours. So you're going to get to know each other, whether you like it or not, kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that was great. And I met some amazing people that I'm still, you know, like some of my best friends today. And yeah, there's these little things, like there's little groups, just almost like finding stuff like what's going on the internet, speaking to people, word of mouth.
So another story shared around the campfire. If you want to share your story or join the Wild Adventures podcast community, make sure to check us up on our website, which is www.thewildadventurespodcast.com, checking out LinkedIn, Patreon, Facebook, and Redbubble. If you like what you heard on today's episode, then leave a review wherever you listen to podcasts and help spread the stories. Also, if you want to share your story, then you can fire me off an email to contact@thewildadventurespodcast.com. Till next time, my wonderful wildlings, I hope you have a fantastic weekend and you have plenty of adventures to share with us come Monday morning. Bye!